Welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are rethinking the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as customer expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Lynn Kolba.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation. So Lynn, tell us, what is your hot take?
So my hot take is that burnout is not a failure of self. It's a systems failure.
I am so excited to have this conversation because you have picked a hot take that is very near and dear to my heart. Longtime listeners will know that it's my my premise that Sunday scaries are a choice as like part of burnout. And it's not a choice in the way that you think it is. It's a choice of your leadership. And we could have great work environments and we could love our jobs if only our leaders were brave enough to do it. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, right? In that burnout is a failure of the system. So tell us a little bit more about your perspective on that.
So my perspective on that is really self-reflection, things that I've done and worked at. And, you know, you put in the 14-hour days and you're like, wow, I'm getting ahead. I'm doing stuff. But right there is the key, right? I'm doing stuff. Are you doing things that are actually moving you forward? Are you doing things that matter, or are you just being busy and kind of caught in that hustle culture? And so much of what exists out there, and so much of even just feeling proud about hustle culture. It's like, oh, I put in a 70-hour week. Oh, I put in an 80-hour week. It's like, if somebody comes up and says, oh, I only worked 15 hours this week, aren't you like, what? Like your concept of them changes. And that's where I think we need to take back that value system on, it's not the hours you put in, it's the quality of the hours. And that's a lot of what I do, is work with businesses and individuals and help them look at what are the minutes and the seconds and the hours and the days that they can start taking off their plate. And as soon as you start relieving things like decisions and reducing that decision fatigue, or relieving just what they do day to day and improving the systems, you have that same leader there making the same decisions with better information and better systems, and that burnout level just reduces.
Yeah, it's incredible how much our society values people who kind of espouse that hustle culture. Like you said, if someone came up to me and was like, oh yeah, I only worked 15 hours on my business this week, I would have been like, okay, loser. Like, yeah, obviously exactly. You don't want it enough. And obviously you're not willing to do whatever it takes. And like, I can hear that little like inner voice inside of me start to like rise up. I'll tell you, I'm like a recovering hustle culture person. I used to brag about the fact that I would work on family vacations and that I would answer emails in line at the zoo. And I used to brag about the fact that I was pulling all-nighters and busting my ass to get these things done. But because like the dopamine hit of the societal regard, yeah, of me hustling felt so good. And it felt like, well, if I'm not hustling, then I don't really want it. And if I don't really want it, then what am I even doing here?
I agree 100%. And you nailed it with that dopamine piece of like, ooh, an email answered and a problem solved and a post made. And we get stuck in that loop. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to perform and wanting to be your best and wanting to do your best and wanting to outdo other people.
Right.
But doing it in line, like you said, at the zoo, that's not even your ideal space to be doing stuff. Because part of what I do too is talk with companies about their tone. Like, imagine the tone. Like, if you answer that email at like with your family, the tone that email would have had, the words you would have chose, and how you would have kind of connected with that client versus if you were sitting in clarity and you had an average work hour day, that email, same content, different words chosen, the client's going to read it differently and your business with them is going to be better. And yeah, that just that drive to do that encapsulates a lot of us. It's trying to tone that down, that, like you said, that hustle culture.
Well, and like, I come from basically, I've only worked for startups or entrepreneurship my entire career. Mm-hmm. And so like it's really pervasive in that startup, trying to get your first dollar, trying to build something, trying to scale. So I can't really speak to like more traditional corporate environments, but I'm sure that it shows up there as well, right? Even in the mega enterprises, you have that expectation from your boss or from your coworkers or for that opportunity, that promotion that you're looking for, where you might be tempted to hustle and kill yourself for a company that's about to, you know, lay you off anyway.
Well, let's pivot outside of traditional business models. And my background is the music industry. So a bass player in a band, I've traveled across Canada, and it's the hustle culture. So you're showing up let's say you're showing up in the afternoon, you're doing your setup, you're doing your interviews, you try to jam some food into your mouth. Then it's wardrobe, getting ready, then showing up on stage like it's the best night of your life every night, doing a performance, tearing down, maybe getting another bit of food into you, getting to the hotel, trying to sleep 6 hours, then out on the road the next morning because you need to be the next venue for setup, for interviews, for whatever you need to do. So this cycle of just churning your days, or like you said, being like kind of eaten up and spit out, especially like sports too, the same thing. And you just, you live it, and then you forget to ask yourself questions of why am I doing this? What were the parts of even just a music, which is a beautiful thing? What were the parts of music I love? What were the parts of being on the sports team that I love? Because I'm not doing that much of it anymore. I'm just doing everything else. And I think, like you said, with startups and entrepreneurs, they get into that and get into that cycle and that hustle, and they lose the vision of why they started the company and all the things they loved about it. And it gets incredibly difficult.
There's something that you said there. There's something that I want to double tap on, and then I want to add on to living every night like it's the best night of your life, right? And I feel that so deeply, because in sports, in music, in being your own boss and being an entrepreneur, you're really living someone's dream. Someone wants what you have. And there is like, I've never really thought about it that way, but there is almost a pressure for me to be like happy about it and always living my best life and recognizing that like somebody wants my life, and I have to, you know, show them like, oh, you know what? It really is that great. And I am so happy, even though I'm working 70 hours a week, and like kind of fake it until you make it, this like performance that we put on.
I agree 100%. So using the original, what I had said with the arts industry, you get out there, the audience is primed. They've paid their money. They are ready for the show. They're ready for you to knock them dead, regardless if... If you have gastrointestinal distress, or, I mean, we've had to go out with having had news that loved ones have passed, and you right. still have to go out there with that brave face. So yes, like in companies, it's almost like you have to validate your investment in yourself, or validate, like, I'm working for myself and it's awesome.
Right. It's great. And I never want to do anything else. And yeah. You know what? It's really working out and everything is perfect.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like, well, that's a lot of the use of the word perfect. So is it as perfect as it can be? And it's not. And I think if we start giving ourselves a little bit of slack with each other and going, oh, and that's where, you know, part of my background too with AI and using it and large language models, and talking to these large language models as a leader or an entrepreneur and going, I'm having a really bad day. This day is going sideways. It's able to help you kind of move and navigate places where maybe your team can't help you, maybe where your family can't help you, or maybe where you can't help yourself, but it provides clarity in some of those areas and can be a bit more supportive, I think, than people take advantage of.
So let's dive into being very specific then, especially as you were bringing up AI. If someone is feeling this, they are seeing themselves in our words and hearing, you know, their own life experiences and kind of what we're talking about, what is the one thing you would have them start doing start exploring, start looking at in order to kind of break this cycle of burnout?
First time for the very, very first thing, I would look at their systems and what are they spending time on? What are the things that we can simplify? What are the things they think are working but are actually not? As simple as, like I worked with a construction company and they would get emails in and they would answer each email individually. And then like, well, some of them maybe no, some of them maybe yes. And it's like, make them fill out a form to pre-qualify and make it go to a spreadsheet. And then you can have everything there and go, yes, yes, no, no. It, and that's so small. Or again, in the construction industry where like electrician friend of mine, she answers her phone while she's on the job. And it's like, girl, you can't do that. You need it to go to voicemail and address those after or get some automated texting going. So systems, the first thing, what is sucking your time and what is sucking your bandwidth and what's giving you decision fatigue? And once you start nailing those down, and replacing them, yeah, it's not going to be a huge hallelujah kind of thing, but it is a moment where you're like, oh, I got an extra hour back today because I didn't have to do this. Or maybe your day improves by 15%. Well, I'd take 15% any day, really.
Well, and I think about that, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing, yeah. Right? You don't have to go from like zero to hero overnight or to do everything perfectly overnight. I'm a big what I'll call like a flow type of worker. And so like yesterday I have a to-do list of about 112 things that I need to be doing. And I just like, I couldn't get it going yesterday and it just was not going to happen for me. You know how you just have a feeling of like, yeah, this is not going to happen. And my husband comes home and he goes, how was your day? I'm like, oh my God, it was terrible. I couldn't get anything going. Nothing was happening. And then as I was thinking about it, as I was like getting up this morning and I feel, you know, more energized today, more ready to take on the day. And I had to kind of like remind myself that the reason I couldn't get it going was there was something in my way yesterday and that's okay. And it's gone now. But like not punishing myself for not getting it going on a Monday and just moving forward into a Tuesday without like that baggage. Because if I came in today being like, well, I didn't get anything done yesterday, so obviously I'm not going to get anything done today. Right. And I think it's okay to figure out your systems and accept that you're not going to get it right every time, even if you have all the systems in place.
I 100% agree. And to give yourself those permissions, like you said, maybe it's just one thing you get done on Monday and there's eight things you get done on Tuesday. As long as you're moving ahead and kind of checking off the check boxes, but then it's also looking at your to-do list and going, is there stuff on here I can remove from manual to automated? And is there stuff on here I'm doing just because I've always done it and maybe I don't need to do it at all? Like maybe it actually has no relevance and I just think I should. So you start looking at your list that way and then weeding it and weeding it. It's a garden, constantly weeding and weeding and planting and planting and weeding.
Yeah, for sure. And I like to also look at things on my list and say, okay, which of these things is going to give me energy? I'm going to be excited to work on this and get it done. Which of these things is going to drain my soul? Like doing accounting, that drains my soul. So if I know I have a bunch of accounting coming up, I have to do a bunch of creative things that I enjoy to kind of like hype myself up to go do that because it drains me. I don't enjoy it. And so really thinking not only what can I automate, what do I have to do, what can I delegate, but what gives me joy and what gives me suffering. Lack of a better way to say it.
It's accounting. We can say that.
Yeah. All of our creatives who are listening are feeling that same way when you have to do any kind of debits and credits. I just want to cry in a corner. But let's talk about some of that automating, because one of your, you know, background is how do you become a human AI collaborator? And I love that you specifically phrase it that way, because I think too many people think that AI is going to just take their job from them and replace them. And I think if you're really thinking about it, I'm excited about the idea of AI replacing the parts of my job I don't want to have to do anymore, so I can do the things I want to have to do. So tell us about that. How can we use the technologies of the day, the systems that we have available to us to augment our intelligence rather than just, you know, try to muddle through the day.
And I think you nailed it right there. It's about augmenting, and it's not, AI is not doing the things. I mean, it can do some of the things right now, and in the future, maybe it will do more. But right now, I look at it as collaborating. So I will come to it, like, let's say in general, come to it with ideas and be like, I want to do a podcast about this, or I want to talk about this, or I want to research more about just a general idea or an author I like. So that's more personal development. But when I look at in my business, how I'm using it for a collaborator, think of it as a really great intern. So the intern kind of knows what your company does and kind of knows things about you. But if you send it off for coffee, it is not coming back with the right coffee until you tell it how you like your coffee. And even then, you're probably every once in a while going to get just tea because it just thought maybe today you would like tea. So you look at it like that and understand where it can place in your kind of business hierarchy. Now it starts making sense. So for example, if I'm using AI, so I use ChatGPT quite a bit, and I'm preparing a proposal for somebody. First thing I do is AI has a complete personality profile of myself. I've created a personality profile of the company and the person I'm pitching to. So let's say this person I'm pitching to loves baseball, dislikes technology, has a short attention span, and I see them every Friday out on their motorcycle. I just add that in. And if I have some emails that we've done back and forth, I'll even caption those and put it in the document and say, this is how they talk. Then when I go and I put the outline of my proposal, I put it all together, I run it through AI and say, based on what you know about me and what you know about the company I'm pitching to and the person specifically, how would you change it? What would you do? Oh, I would actually shorten it quite a bit and add this and maybe add a reference to baseball here and a motorcycle Harley reference here. And all of a sudden, I've created something that is super niche with my collaborator. And that document now has a much higher potential to land with them versus how everybody else uses ChatGPT, which is write me a proposal for blah, blah, blah. Not knowing who they're writing for or who they're writing to, it's just so generic. So to me, it as a creative, you create it first. And you're using your intern to help support it. Like, I think of it like this. One of my favorite authors is Stephen King. I just love him. He's great. But he's writing his books and he's getting an editor to help refine it. It's not just going out. Some of the most amazing songwriter. I mean, think of the Beatles. The Beatles exist, but they have a producer. Or existed, but they had a producer to help them refine their ideas. Everything is a collaboration with somebody else to create something that's bigger than both of them. And that's the way I look at using AI for what I do.
Yeah, it's almost like AI is one of the greatest equalizers that we've ever had access to, right? Because if I was a big shot who had a copywriter on staff, right, instead of a small business owner, well, why wouldn't I give them an email to polish and clean up if I had that available to me? And if I had an entire team of researchers who could learn everything about the company that we're going out to write a proposal for, to make sure we're really on target and personalized and like really thoughtful, especially anyone who delivers a kind of service to another person where they expect that level of hyper-personalization and deep understanding. And yet I'm just one person. I don't have a team of researchers. I don't have an email copywriter. I don't have an editor. And I love the idea of using AI as the world's greatest potential intern that you've ever had access to, even if you are not a multi-billion dollar conglomerate.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's where I think how you use this intern will then set you apart even further. Like I said, the more they know about you, and the services you can actually deliver. Because right now, if you're a company looking for someone to, let's say, build you a website, you could have 20 proposals that come in that sound exactly the same.
Yeah.
And you could have even 50, let's say 50 proposals sound exactly the same. And now you have to vet which ones can actually deliver, or which ones just ChatGPT or Gemini write all the right words in. So now we're talking about proof of delivering that service. So it's the onus on the client to go, well, can they actually deliver this? Are they actually a company? Am I just going to put this deposit in with them and then the money's going to disappear into the wind? So that's another point. And a lot of that is in the validity and the reviews and the company and what they're doing, as well as, like you said, that internship and using that hyper niche-ness to make sure that you're speaking to them directly.
I think that there is maybe three, maybe more levels of usage based on what I'm hearing from you. So you get your ChatGPT, your Gemini, your Claude, whatever you signed up for. There's almost like that initial out of the box where you haven't really done anything with it and you write a proposal and you're just like, write me a proposal. And then it's super generic and it doesn't stand up from the rest. Then there's almost that next layer of you've tuned it for you, right? It knows how you like to write, how you like to think, et cetera. And so maybe you write a proposal that seems very true to you and to who you are. But I think that third level is where a lot of people forget, and you've nailed it, right? Like, not only does your AI know you, but it knows who you're talking to and your customer. And I think a lot of people stop at level two where their AI knows them, but forget that there's a whole another layer of intelligence there when your AI knows you and your customer. So tell us more about, like, how do you get to the point where your solution, your systems can actually get you to that third tier of understanding how AI works?
Well, a lot of it is dependent on your communications with that person, or if you're cold calling someone and making a proposal. So, for example, I'm going to be doing a proposal to our local municipality, and I know what it is. It's a standard government RFP. So I have the RFP. I've run it through ChatGPT, and it's like, okay, it's asking for this, that, and this. And then, okay, the next part is on me. Okay, so who's in the department? What can I find out about them? What has the department been doing? What's happening in the news? Is the department expanding or shrinking? And how can I level that language in? So really, a lot of it's research. Yeah. Research and doing that. And the extra, let's just say 2 hours of research, if it lands you that contract, oh my gosh. And that's where in the future, but it's also accessible here. So I'm going to pivot. I was testing out AI agents. So I gave it a screenshot of my calendar, and it's just an Outlook calendar. It's nothing crazy. It said the name of the person I was meeting with. I said, can you please take all my meetings, go online, find these people, and make me meeting notes for it. So it did that while I ate supper, and I came back and I had a document with 2 to 3 paragraphs on each person that I was going to be meeting with. So that's where we actually are. That's accessible to you and I right now. And as we move forward, it's going to be personality profiles. They're going to be able to go to the Facebook pages and LinkedIn and how they're wording things and what's important to them. So now, those that are willing to invest that little bit of extra time, even though at the beginning of the conversation we talked about how sacred time is, they'll be the ones getting these contracts and getting these clients, because they're going to be able to niche down so well.
Yeah. Considering, you know, all of the incredible people that you know or that you aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is doing this better than anyone else?
Well, that is a really great question. And who I love in terms of adaptability, marketing, silliness, because I love a bunch of silliness, and connecting and creating a culture. Let me see. And I can't specifically say for the AI, but their app is amazing. It's Duolingo. Like, oh my gosh. So yes, there's tons of others out there, but I mean, there's a whole, they've created a whole social media culture about Duolingo. My daughter wanted to go as the Duolingo character for Halloween last year. So there's that. And there's like, I get the notifications, I get the prompts, they've gamified it. If you cancel, you know, there's all these other options, and really kind of getting into marketing in general. To me, I find Duolingo's nailing it. Using AI specifically, I'll give you a different example. I signed up for a company for trial software. Okay, so we've all done that trial, blah, blah, blah. Didn't like it. So I canceled it, which, you know, happens quite a bit. Within 5 minutes, I got a phone call from that company, and it was a big company.
Wow.
And it was an offer 50% off, and it was obviously an AI call. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's the level. So the action I took on the internet created a switch that flipped for the AI to create that, or for the agent to say, I'm going to call Lynn. She canceled, but I bet if we give her 50% off, she'll probably sign back on. I'm like, oh wow. Okay. So that's where we're at. And even with another company I use, Sendable, I was on with their chat agent, and I wanted to bring a new client in, and the agent was like, bang, bang, like it was immediately there, which, you know, 2 years ago, you had to wait for that chat agent to pop up. It was immediately there. It was super helpful. It resolved everything and even processed a financial transaction for me, which I was like, okay, this took 10 minutes versus usually I'm on with chat help for like an hour or more. So this is where customers now, even if you think about expectations, their expectations are going to change in the next year on customer services. So like you and I with smaller companies, how are we going to compete with that? We're going to have to lean in even heavier to things like AI.
And if someone is really connecting with you and they want to learn more, where can they find you online?
You can find me online at cyberprarmy.com. And for your podcast, I have a special page. So it's cyberprarmy.com/thecastle. And we have a whole bunch of freebies and goodies. And that's where if people want to book a 30-minute session with me to just talk about what the heck is going on with AI, that's the place to do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This was a great conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.